Drum roll, and we're live. All right. Thanks, everyone, for joining us today. Here with Tony Souza from Souza Consulting?
Yeah, you got it.
All right. Souza Consulting. Look, Tony, wonderful to have you here. Yeah. Wonderful to have your friendship, I would also say, as well. You've certainly been a someone to follow, period, in this space.
Full stop.
Someone to follow, learn from. You've done a great job. Hang on. I've got it live right now. Hang on. Okay. We can't have that going on. Okay. That's off. All right. This is the problem with live. One of your friendship to lead and follow. Certainly one of the things that I've loved in terms of this is a big business, a lot of moving parts, a lot of people that have like shell up. That represents themselves. And I think that one of the things that you've allowed people to do is by going forward and being first, you've created people, an opportunity for people to present themselves authentically. You've given permission to a whole audience of people to get out there and stand up on their own and create their own brand, where conventionally they haven't been allowed to do that. So that's salute you for all that. That's been outstanding. Now, this show, Getting to Hell Yes, your background in operations and then moving into brand and then now moving into your own business. You talk a lot about the buyer, the problems you solve. And so you've had experience both on both sides of the coin in terms of like operator side of things. Now you're a vendor from the dark side and you begin to understand, you know, the buyer's journey, the people and the problem are solved. So as always, for everyone listening today, Getting to Hell Yes, we're talking to folks that are in the business of selling. Now, when we think about selling, this is obviously about activating change. And activating change is a period of discomfort for most people. And so we want to make sure that change is something that is a response to a position that they don't want to be in. So why do you want to activate that change? Because all things being equal, it's very comfortable to stay in equilibrium, right? And so we talk about getting to hell yes. The whole premise is that people are seeking a solution to their current equilibrium because their equilibrium is not balanced. It's not comfortable, or they can foresee discomfort. And so those are hell yes buyers, right? They prioritize solving the problem that you solve, and they may not know what that looks like from a solution perspective, but they understand what the pain is. They are able to articulate the problem and they're actively seeking alternatives. This is brought to you by IRCX. IRCX is where AI telemaintenance software for property management. And from there, we'll hand that over to Tony. We appreciate everyone listening. Ask questions. We love the engagement. And Tony, a bit about your background. How did you end up in this role? What's the problem you're solving now?
Oh, man. Well, as a young child, I always wanted to be a founder of a consulting firm in property management. And so I worked backwards from 10 years old to here I am today. Kidding. Thank you for the intro, all the warm comments that you've said. And I'm sure we're going to unpack those here momentarily. I think I find myself in the current situation that I am overseeing and opening a consulting firm, Souza Consulting, because I think over the years I just identified there is tremendous need, there was a need for a consultant with my skill set that I think understands both the vendor supplier side as well as the operator side to be able to bridge that gap of understanding both from a communication standpoint, leadership standpoint, culture standpoint, and probably what I'm most known for most recently is just understanding brand and storytelling. Mm-hmm. And that's a tremendous need that I see on both sides of the aisle, but definitely on the supplier side for sure. PMC side could use a lot of work there as well. I've come to realize, I think with my group of experiences, as an actor, filmmaker, broadcaster prior to my life in multifamily, my natural ability to see life in stories and through storyboards, helps me communicate to those professionals and those in the corporate world who don't think that way, to help them understand how to craft a story. And a lot of, you know, we'll talk a little bit about that, you know, what that means, because I think a lot of people think, well, is that just my founder story? And how many times can I say that without, you know, spamming an audience? No, that's not just your founder story. We could talk about, you know, quite a bit, you know, if the questions go there, just in regards to what is a story and how many components of a story can you tell? And really, you can skin the cat a lot of ways, but you have to know what you're doing and you have to be able to sort of be precise about it.
So why is brand important in this business? I mean, and there's two sides to that. There's the vendor side and then the buyer side. So, you know, in this business, sorry, better put, why is brand a gap in this business?
Gosh, that's actually a bigger question. Why is it such a gap? Frankly, my estimation, having been in this business 2 decades, is frankly, I don't think it's been a focus. Pre-pandemic, I think people, the world was different. I think it was predicated on in-person relationships that were built and fostered over decades and many years. And the pandemic shifted everything to an online, almost virtual community, a digital community in a lot of ways. And so I think our industry, because again, it gets the bad rap, and I think sometimes deservingly so, and sometimes undeservingly, but ultimately I think it was it's a business of handshakes, in-person handshakes. And right. that's how we make relationships and build business. Pandemic hits, that completely changes, turns into an online digital community. And I just don't think our industry was well positioned for that. And I think still struggles to this day in understanding how impactful digital relationships, or virtual relationships, if you will, turn into IRLs, right? In real lives, relationships, which in real life then turns into business typically. But the progression in my mind now is establishing an online digital relationship and community. That's where it starts. That's where we live. We live on our phones. We live in a digital mm-hmm. world, like it or you don't like it, regardless of your moral position of where our society sort of lives. We live in a digital community now. And so you need to partake. And again, like I said, I just don't think our industry was well positioned to build community there at that time. And frankly, I don't even know if I was, but I just jumped right in, full cannonballed in on this digital, virtual community build. And, 5 years later, here we are.
So in retrospect, you kind of acknowledge that the business went from a local business to a global business in like 6 months?
Yeah. I mean, ultimately, to use that same analogy, it's like we discovered the internet, right? And in 2020, it was like, oh, wow, the World Wide Web. And everybody's online. And so now we've become, like you said, a local brick and mortar to now the world. We can connect with anybody in the world at any time in real time. So
what does brand do for a business, or at least, what do you end up fixing all the time?
Well, I think ultimately, I think a lot of businesses are really unaware of how their brand, at times even personal brand, but we'll talk about corporate brands, are perceived in the marketplace, both by their customers, by their peers. I think unfortunately or fortunately, leaders of businesses are so hyper close to the trees, they can't see the forest. And so they're hyper-focused on all the features and benefits that they do amazingly. And they live and breathe that and drink that Kool-Aid all day, every day, because that's just kind of what you do when you're that close to a business. And you haven't really set up the apparatus or pieces around you to be able to give you honest feedback. Typically hierarchies, right? Just say yes, right? Like, we're doing great. You don't really build in a system of accountability because it's just uncomfortable. And it's just really not a part. From my experience thus far, kind of this, the multifamily corporate nature is not to build in sort of an apparatus of accountability. And because of that, you just for so long drink your own Kool-Aid that you're unaware of how you're perceived in the marketplace. And when business slows down or sales slows down or visibility slows down or traffic slows down, you're bamboozled. And then you often, I see a lot of blame on the customers or the algorithm, right? And when the reality is, when you really kind of look under the hood, you realize there's a lot of things, a lot of messages and a lot of perceptions that you can get in front of a little bit earlier and to be able to convey what you want to convey. Now, this has nothing to do with product or service. Notice I didn't mention any of that. Some of these companies are completely unaware of how they're perceived, maybe negatively or less than positively, may have the best product or service in the biz. But if you're not perceived in the most positive way as the company or service that provides the most value for that particular product or service, your phone call like that one is not going to ring. You know what I mean? So, your email is not going to get emailed. You just don't know the leads you're not getting, right? Because you're just a bit in a bubble and hyper unaware of how the marketplace sees you and your brand.
So then the problem, getting into the problem that you solve. So like brand is a solution, right? To a problem that someone's seeking to solve. So what are they seeking to solve where brand becomes an alternative to consider?
Brand is visibility, right? Brand is an element of advertising. Brand is what people know about you, good or bad. And oftentimes the biggest challenge is simply we don't know about you. It's less about, oh gosh, we have a negative reputation. Oh gosh, we have an incredible reputation. My experience has been, especially with kind of the mid-tier to lower tier suppliers that I aim to help, really, just being a small business myself, is they just don't, they're not on anyone's radar, right? Or in large scale. In a way that they think they are. And again, you know, their perception is because, you know, handshakes are getting me further. And I had a few calls today. You're very close to the trees to think like, oh, today was a good day. I had three calls, right? Like, well, you know, when you have an opportunity to reach a mass audience, welcome to the World Wide Web, right? From a visibility standpoint. So I come in there and sort of give them an online assessment, you know, just kind of a digital footprint assessment of kind of where you are, where your brand stands out to someone who doesn't know you, right? So this isn't the people close to the trees. These are the people looking at the forest, myself,
sure.
You know, anyone I work with, to say, this is how you come across to a new customer, good, bad, the ugly. And to be honest, like most of the time, you know, they're a little taken aback. Ultimately, I think many of them actually think, you know, actually there's an element of truth usually in the feedback I give. They just weren't willing to address it either with themselves or their team.
Interesting. So then, like, because they kind of like never acknowledged the need of brand, right? And they operated just fine forever and ever with brand, right? And forgive me if I'm kind of pulling at this too long, because if there's
a misread,
let's do it. But like, because I want to get into storytelling as well. Like on a brand side of things, like if they've operated without it for so long, and then now this is this new offer, how do they prioritize their brand and in order to make it something they want to solve right now? Like, or is it the distribution piece of it? Is it both? Like, is it like brand distribution or is it brand promise? Like, how do we begin to knock those pins down that in terms of the problem we're trying to solve?
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, being an operator myself, I tell all the clients that, you know, operations and your processes and your product and service have to work and be stellar, right? So I can come in and, you know, work with you and your team and create incredible messages, great deliverables, create a brand that sort of fills all the things that you want it to feel. But at the end of the day, like if their touch point and their interactions with you, your product, service, customer service, technology, whatever it is, fall short of your brand promise, then there's a complete disconnect. And frankly, they're not going to continue to do business with you. And they're going to find every way to terminate or get out of that contract that they signed with you as quickly as possible. So first things first, I highly recommend, again, is making sure if you do have any negative perception in the marketplace, any bad reviews, any operational sort of holes, work to improve those or fill those, if you will, before we start to really create sort of this incredible brand that attracts ultimately attention. Attention then leads to curiosity. Curiosity then leads to leads. Leads then turn into all the things you know them to be from the sales side of things, and then turn it hopefully into partnerships and business. So it all starts with attention and visibility. And most, again, just don't have that. So I think your question is like, what do they prioritize? I think there are many companies currently in multifamily are befuddled. And my job is really becoming more of an educator about how the attention economy works today in 2025 and how it'll work in the future. About how this process works and how people make decisions. And it's typically online before you even know they're evaluating you. And great marketers know this through website development and other things is, you know, your customer is evaluating you before you even know they're going to be a customer potentially. That's in creating, you know, the landing pages, the touch points, and ultimately the brand, because if they don't know about you or know about your brand, then it's unlikely they're going to even be on your website, you know. SEO artists and PPC artists, of course, would say, well, we'll get visibility that way. And they're not wrong. That's another technical way to get, you know, top of listing on a Google page. But ultimately, if there's no brand, there's no emotional connection. And I think that kind of leads to the storytelling component.
Right.
And we could talk about that and why movies are so dynamic and true, genuine stories, both on the sales side or on the brand side, are so dynamic and frankly, very hard to do. It is definitely a craft and it's definitely an art and a science to tell compelling stories that people care about.
So then for your target market now, and Sousa, you're focusing on vendors that are looking to sell into property management / real estate, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, those folks, typically, where do you find their brand? Like, how do you begin to measure or assess their brand? Because we'll get the storytelling in a second here. Because I think I get where you're going here. Is like, how do they get into understanding their brand so that they can associate that brand with a problem? Here's an example, right? I'm thirsty. I'm maybe a little dragging along a little bit. It's afternoon. You know what I crave? I crave a Coke. You know, and I'll grab a Coca-Cola, I'll drink that, I'll get a little, it tastes good, reminds me of summertime. All of a sudden, you know, I feel, you know, and then I've got the physiological reaction to it. But like, I thought of that Coke, people say, I need a Coke. They actually don't say, I need a Coca-Cola. Zip, or I need to get a bump, you know, I don't want to say bump because that sounds terrible. But like, they all of a sudden need a pick-me-up right in the afternoon. Yeah. They go grab a Coke or they grab a water, whatever they do. But like, that there's already a psychological connection to the outcome with that brand. They don't often say, I don't want a cola, right? They'll say, I want a Coke. And so that's obviously an example of an incredibly successful brand. You know, when you take a look at what they do, what they've done, but then how do we do that? Like from a vendor perspective, selling into this business, how do we take that? How do I know that's a problem?
I think first and foremost, in 2025, getting business, and in my opinion, running a business, period, getting visibility and attention is always your main task. it's always a problem. That's like table stakes. Come to the table. Getting visibility and getting new customers is always your problem to fix if you're trying to scale your business, right? So you know, you should. Now, if you're overwhelmed with business, you know, think your brand and your product are probably doing pretty well. Let's be honest, right? Whether it be your public brand or personal brand through referrals, you know. But for the most part, most businesses I come across, especially on the supplier side, would love to have more business. And so I think to answer your question initially is, how do you know that's a problem? You should come to the table assuming that is your problem to fix every single day when you work with your team, right? Say, how do we drive more interest? How do we, drive more visibility into our brand? And ultimately, how do we secure more customers, right? Is sort of the sales goal every single day. And it should be of any sort of enterprise that's for profit. Now to kind of break out your metaphor of, I just want a Coke. So two things are happening there, right? So you have the soda industry in the 1940s, 1950s, if you will, really propelling themselves. And I think probably kicked off more in the 60s and 70s, you know, Pepsi Cola, Coca-Cola, they all went at it to say, listen, Coke is soda pop, if you will, just to use my grandfather's term, is something you want to have in your life. It comes with great memories during Christmas time. When you're thirsty, you need sugar water. So an industry has come together to say, listen, we're going to, now were they in cahoots, you know, at the top? My sense is, you know, high level collaborators are always collaborating. So my hunch is probably to say, how do we tell society that soda pop is something that they need to consume and it makes them feel better? And so you have an industry sort of focus that are going to say, you need us. And I think I would argue sort of a similar metaphor is, let's say your business, right? Centralization can create massive financial process efficiencies that will lead to, you know, increase in financial profitability and ROI, right? Yeah. If you create those efficiencies. So there's a segment of our industry that I think, I don't want to say in cahoots, but ultimately those who provide centralized type services, I think you guys know of each other, and you guys are probably friendly to some extent, even if you are competitors, to say the industry needs ultimately our services. Now, my argument, you know, your argument, IrisCX or any other sort of centralized service or technology is to say, we're the best company for your centralization needs, right? And again, I'm speaking very broadly. So now it becomes sort of a segment of an industry saying, you need us. And you said soda pop, I'll say centralization. Now the brand, now the company, Coca-Cola, PepsiCo, you can name them, now becomes your companies, right? IrisCX, the other companies that are out there that I won't mention. And they come and say, you know, you need centralization. So let's establish centralization as at least a need. And I think operators are now coming to the conclusion that, yes, centralization, I understand it better. And I perceive that there's actually a need for it. the next step for a company like yours or others wants to come to the marketplace and say, okay, it's established that you like soda pop or you need centralization. You need a company to help you implement that, right?
Yeah.
We are the best company to do that. Now that becomes the brand storytell, right? So Coca-Cola, PepsiCo, where did they really focus early on? It was during, if you recall, it was during, especially over the last couple of decades, it's been Super Bowl, it's been Christmas time, right? It's this emotional connection to our company and our brand that is connecting your heart first and foremost, and then your brain, because your heart says, I want it and I'm willing to pay whatever it is for it, because it reminds me, I think you referenced, it reminds me of my childhood, good memories, right? And so then your heart convinces your brain, because your heart is very, very, most people make decisions based on their emotions and their heart. You then convince your brain that, like, I'm going to use my money to pay for this, because I think there's something there, because I'm emotionally drawn to it. And the emotional draw to a brand is something that ultimately is why we do almost anything or buy any brand that you buy. Is it by far the best quality? I don't know. There's probably other brands out there, whether it be t-shirts, hats, belts, cars. I mean, there's other competitors out there, but there's an emotional connection. Like, if I was to ask you, and I won't, like, what brand of car is your jam, right? Like, you'll tell me, like, that probably, or at least the top two. Like, I focus on Mercedes or Lexus, or I love a Toyota because it's reliable, right? Do you know that to be technically, scientifically true? I don't know. You think it, and you believe it, right? And ultimately, that's the same thing. That's the same thing that's happening in our industry, is when I need this service, right? I know of a couple of companies, or I just know of a few people. And that's where I think, you know, the power of brand, both corporate brand, and if you could do it well, which, you know, my last experience, you know, obviously at RPM was to align a personal brand and a corporate brand. If you could do that really well, you're top of mind for almost everybody when they think of whatever service that you're offering, just because people think of people, because we're connected to humans, because we're not bots yet. We're still humans. And so we're connected to other humans. And then you also think of brands or companies that you've seen vaguely sometimes, just generally, that do something like this or have talked about something like this in the past. And so when your boss asks you to put a list of options together, you go into your database and you think, who do I know that would know about this? Or who do I recall was talking about some of these things? And I'm going to go to them, you know, initially. Now, you may also do a ChatGPT search or a Google search in combination of these other things. But I will tell you, what secures the most leads in businesses are those personal connections, what otherwise called referrals, right?
I think it's the interesting thing about this business, right, is it's like, it's very personal, and everyone will tell you that over and over again. But what's interesting is to watch that transcending of, like, we just talked about a B2C experience, right? But the B2C experience moving towards a B2B experience, right? So then there's the whole, like, no one got fired for hiring IBM, right? Brand statement. And that's an interesting statement, because it's about de-risk, right? And so, like, what we may consume on a B2C perspective, we may choose to purchase items on impulse or to get, you know, a lift, feel good about ourselves. On the B2B side of things, the reverse is true, where it's like, I'm seeking to minimize risk. And so that nobody gets fired for hiring IBM statement exists. No one gets, you know, if you're, you know, if we have to be aware that we are the size that we are and be very conscious of that. So then we go into conversations, there's an active kind of de-risk positioning, right? So we've got our brand promise, what we do, here's the proof, here's the data, et cetera. Here's kind of the narratives and the stories, but ultimately, you know, we're mindful of the fact that we're not, you know, the biggest, whatever, we're not, I'll be an example, like the biggest alternative out there, the largest alternative out there, because we do it differently, right? The largest alternative out there is the kind of standard. And so when we seek to have conversations, it's like, why doesn't the standard work for you, right? What's going wrong? Why is that blocking your objectives and your goals?
Well, I would say a couple of different things is brand does more of getting you in the party into the door, right?
For sure.
And I think what you're unpacking a bit more is being able to sort of, from a salesmanship standpoint, sort of speak to the current marketplace, size of company, a lot of the sort of specific details that you may get in sort of a demonstration or a one-on-one, why should I really, you know, pick your service? A great brand gets you introductions and in the door into the party. Right. And then at that point, strategic business development operators, senior leaders of companies, sales teams, like they craft these stories and with authenticity, I trust, about why they're best positioned to get their business. Now, what a brand does, which again, most people don't realize, they're just not invited to parties that other brands are invited to. And that's been that, I don't want to say it's the challenge, but it definitely is the obstacle, or what I see as the landscape for me ahead is they actually don't know, many mid-sized supplier companies, especially even the PMC side to some extent, don't know the incredible benefit of being invited into these parties and getting into these doors to give them opportunities to close deals because they're simply just not being invited to them. Now, what they think I'm saying is, Tony, can you provide me warm introductions? I'm not saying that. I'm saying what we do is provide you digital virtual visibility so that people think of you right away when they think of this, this type of service, to where then it becomes, instead of you outbounding cold calling, it now becomes inbound leads of interest into what you guys do, because we all live on our mobile phones in virtual communities. Now they're calling you versus you calling them in a cold call situation, that the probability of that converting into any sort of meeting is very low from my experience. So.
Yep. No, and definitely there's a life cycle to it all, right? You've got to do the intentional touch points, cold calling, outbound, to start stirring the coals on what that brand can do for the sake of getting feedback on what your brand positioning is. Because like when you consider brand in terms of it's about fulfilling that promise, and that promise is about solving a problem, right? So that the buyer is able to articulate what their problem is. And they, one of our questions is always, what are they typing into Google? Right. So when we talk about I'll transition to that in a second. We talk about the buying mindset, right? Brand establishes the emotional foothold or beachhead for that purchase. If you don't have brand and you're working with logical brain, you're going uphill already.
Right.
Slippery uphill, mind you, as well, right? I find difficult.
Even the metaphor I would even say to that is, you're in the abyss, right? Like you're floating in space with no direction, right? Mm-hmm. And you're just I have a great product and just going nowhere with getting no visibility or attention. You're just there's no impactful momentum in any way, because there's not any sort of message or visible impactful story that's being told in any way from your brand or marketing side of things.
I find that the kind of the plot line, the struggle with brand is that it's, if you've got I'll use a Coca-Cola story again, or it's simple. Coca-Cola is simple enough that the brand can mean something right away. I mean, we don't think about Minute Maid when you think about Coke, but Minute Maid's owned by Coke. We don't think about, in the IBM case, IBM's so broad that it doesn't mean, it means something different to that buyer.
But this is, and I think you make a good point, but if I was to pitch to you today, Guillermo, like I have brown soda water that's going to take over the world, right? You would say, I don't want to cuss on your show, right? Like, get the hell out of here.
You're crazy.
Get the hell out of here with this brown soda water. You got to be kidding me. This is just full of sugar and it's brown. You're going to tell me everyone's going to want this and we're going to be a $1 billion company. Please.
It looks like dirty water.
Bro, please get out of this room. Right. So, but when you have these visionaries and these storytellers that say, we're going to put it in a can, and then we're going to take that red and we're going to take that white and we're going to put it in promotional commercials that Santa Claus is sipping brown soda water. Right. And because you love Santa Claus during the holidays, you're going to also want to crack one open, whether it be in a can or in a beautiful bottle. And you're going to want to open the bottle, but you're going to want to collect the bottles as well. Right. So that is just without getting into all the details of what Storytel is, taking brown soda water, sugar water, and creating sort of this magical movie story, Disney story, if you will, about why you want to pay $1 to $2 to $3, a can or a bottle today for sugar water that's brown.
Something's basically bad for you.
That's frankly carcinogens and other things that are probably giving you cancer ultimately long term. None of it is good. It just makes you feel good because you think it makes you feel good, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Ultimately, that's, in my opinion, and for me personally, in our my consulting group, I want to align obviously with those who provide great products and service, right? And to be honest, would I align with something unhealthy like brown sugar water? Probably not, like today, right? So now, if I knew, equity shares in Coca-Cola and I was to, go in early on, it would be what it is today. Yeah, I would probably reconsider. But from a health standpoint, an alignment standpoint, for me, I look for those companies that are obviously committed to their customers, their product and service are top of the line, because once that's the case and once that's proven, that's the underpinning foundation that you already offer great product and service that's actually needed. Yeah. That's another thing. Then we can craft this beautiful brand that you want to tell. And not all of them are the same. Not all of them, frankly, are beautiful colors and logos. And I think that's where actually a lot of folks get really caught up is in just that, right? Is the deliverables, is the logos and colors. I've had so many conversations with segments of this industry that think that's what a brand is. Now, brand consistency, sure. Is there an emotion that comes with some of the images and tones and colors that you use? Of course. But is that a true brand that sits in the minds and hearts of people? No, it's not. It's the stories. And ultimately, it's what your advertising message, your positioning message, your brand message, where and how it sits in their hearts and minds. And that's not easy to do. And it takes time, it takes consistency, and it takes really kind of an aligned message, sometimes 6 to 12 months, if not longer. Everybody wants immediate leads, right? Can you build me a brand in 30 days? The answer is yes, technically. But will it generate, sales ongoingly, and will you know how to run it? Very unlikely.
I mean, yeah, I think there's the so when we talk about the problem that you solve, really, it comes down to a revenue problem, right? And so the revenue problem,
at the very bottom, it's a revenue problem, but it's a visibility problem, ultimately, is why they're like, hey, I need help.
Yeah, I need help because I need to get leads, right. And I do, like everybody in our business, we want to transition to inbound. There's that tipping point where you get inbound, right? And, as you kind of like build out your brand, your promise, you understand your market better, you understand the pain that you solve, and you're able to pull on that. You're able to associate your solution in simple terms so that people can understand it, and then they can kind of like choose to buy, right? It's emotionally more secure.
Right.
So then, the problem is around the top of funnel pieces, and someone who's in our business may not go and seek a brand solution. They may not even be aware that their brand is out of alignment with what, I'll tell you my story. Our first company, it was first called I See What You See, which sounded really brilliant at the time, but it was spelled
I see.
Yeah, you got it. Okay. And which was like in every single conversation, it was like, and I was just talking about this in Orlando, ick, wook, ook, what's that? And I was like, oh, it really seemed genius when we built it, but it ultimately was like very difficult to brand because it didn't linger in the mind and didn't associate. And it kind of, people, I think after some time, it ultimately became a bit creepy. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. And that often happens when you have, to the point I made earlier, is when you have founders and people that are part of the company super close to the trees. Right. And probably not outsourcing a handful of names, to others to say, when you hear this, what do you think? And, people not connected to the trees will be like, that's the stupidest name I've ever heard. And, and unfortunately, even brilliant founders and incredibly smart people get hurt very easily too, right? Like, what do you mean that's the stupidest name? Like, doesn't this make sense? Like, I see what you see. And they're like, no, I don't work for you. So I don't really care if you're butthurt about it. Right. Truthfully, that's a bit of my own secret sauce and my own personal brand for years. A lot of people don't realize this. Like, I have a small inner circle that I send content, sometimes messages to say, like, am I totally off here? Like, I feel like this is the spot on message, but is this visual off, or is it going to make me look this way? What's the perception of this? And I have a really trusted core that I bounce a lot of messages and content off, especially when I know it's kind of borderline. And I'll be honest, like, they'll come back like, Tony, this is bogus. You should not post this. Because I trust them and they're built into kind of my inner circle, I have to really think about it and maybe craft the story a little differently. But I just unfortunately don't think a lot of businesses like have that built-in accountability structure, especially when it comes to brand and messaging.
It's typical. I mean, I think it's kind of one of those things, like it's unequivocally important because it represents your message and your promise. It's also unequivocally immeasurable because it's bundled with everything else you do. And so when you got it wrong, it's not working and you feel that pain because everything, you know, it's like having a leaking 4-cylinder engine that's running on 3. You just, it takes so much more effort, right? And then you got a brand that's working, and there's lots of companies doing a great job of that in our marketplace right now. Mm-hmm. And it just slides. It just, there's so much like, you know, there's just less friction. It just goes through, right? And so like when we talk about the problem, so top of funnel inbound leads, right? That's ultimately what we're trying to, and you know, the brand piece, the promise of it helps feed the top of funnel inbound leads, and the whole exercise of doing a brand promise exercise, I've done a couple in my life, helps you figure out and challenge yourself on the promise that you deliver so you can go and find that market. And then when we get into, so someone would be typing into Google, like I need to get more inbound. And then there's a brand education opportunity to teach them how their brand could be either helping or hurting them. You can make an offer for a brand assessment, et cetera. And then talk about the distribution. Cause like, if you don't have the offer, the distribution is irrelevant, right?
It's all irrelevant.
And so the brand yeah. offer has to match the channel. Right. And then they even solve the problem. And so like, I find it interesting, like for me in our conversation with our company, like the battle testing our brand has been something that I've been working on for probably a year, especially in this business. And I found that the best feedback ever to what you just described was testing the brand every single day. Like it's like, it really is 1,000 1-minute conversations. And then the best feedback I've ever gotten, there's actually Ben from Perpexo was, yeah. I was at, where was I at? We were at Blueprint and I was describing what we do to somebody. And he just said, pause, it's telemaintenance software. And the guy was like, oh, I get that. And so, okay, well I got to unpack that. Cause then you think about the mental positioning of what we do, mm-hmm. like remote maintenance software is kind of fits in a box, but doesn't fit in a pre-existing box. And so we kind of shifted to that language, not our brand, but a supporting statement to our brand.
It bridges it. Yeah.
Yeah. Cause like we can say what our brand is and we still haven't landed on our tagline yet. And our brand promise is evolving, but ultimately like it's evolving as we get more feedback from the market.
And well, it's a, I mean, it's the same thing as I've launched, right? A lot of what I do, especially for multifamily, is tip of spear, if not the bleeding edge of this thing, not just the leading edge, but the bleeding edge. Mm-hmm. And so I've learned these lessons like you in somewhat of the hard way. Like, what do you do, Tony? Well, you know, and then I go through the mechanics of what I do. Yeah. And I can just tell, like, if they don't speak this language or understand it or really care, like, you know, it's just over their head. And so for me, I've tried to, as a wordsmith and a writer and a creative, try to simplify it. And really probably the best way I've been able to simplify it in a tag is really, I have it listed on my LinkedIn first liner, is I bring brands to life, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you know, sure, through a lot of scientific and sort of mechanical ways. And, but that's, I bring your brand to life to make it seem real and something consumers, not even that they need, because you know, so, and sometimes that is the challenge of like, you know, your consumers don't even know they need your service. Right. And so that's right. A whole different sort of, approach in educating.
That's the product market fit problem too. Right. Mm-hmm. And I think that like, even for us, like in the way we articulate our solution, we've really gotten, I'd say we've gotten much better in the last 7 or 8 months in narrowing in on the part of the problem that we want to solve. So as you described, like our tagline, centralized maintenance today, that is relevant to people that are trying to solve the specific part of maintenance centralization that we solve best.
Right.
And so that's the part that's been really helpful, is being able to have conversations and delegate other parts of the problem to other solutions.
Right.
So, you know, hey, you want this, we should consider a company XYZ, or we integrate with them. Right.
And that's the key to robust partnerships as well, which ultimately provide everybody a little bit of business So it's an exciting marketplace. I mean, I have a lot of people that I talk to, consultants, entrepreneurs, even within multifamily. I get really excited about this because I'm sensing a couple of things. I'm sensing the dam is about to break in understanding brand and multifamily. I think when people start understanding how important brand is and a lot of the service that I provide and others, you know, we're going to be incredibly well positioned. Now, is it hard when you're early? Yeah. You know, people are like, I don't get it. Like, don't worry, you won't get it, you know, for a couple of years until everyone else is doing it. And then you're like, oh, okay, that's what you were talking about. And
well, and the metaphor, the analog for the market's hospitality, right? I mean, like a Four Seasons is different than a Courtyard, both great hotels, but they're different experiences and you pay different for different things. And so like the amount of people that are from hospitality and multifamily right now is growing at a faster and faster rate.
So and they understand this brand.
They understand the brand, but then brand in hospitality is a totally different thing than like what we're considering here. Like you think of Four Seasons, like it's a, it is a wall to wall end to end brand experience.
Right.
Like it is the uniform. It's the, you know, I've got this from Happy Summit. It's the, your name tag can't be like this. It has to be like this
left. Right. And this is where like where I get excited as well is having an operator background is understanding that level of brand hospitality. Right. So so our constant focus on the op side is to really, you know, obviously provide financial viability for the asset and financial revenue for the asset manager or the investor. But at the end of the day, our site teams are hyper focused. And I would even argue like from RVP down are hyper focused on residential experience, right? Which, you know, in the hospitality business, they're hyper focused on guest experience, right? Which I think is what you're speaking to about sort of this end-to-end brand experience. And I'll tell you, our business is well positioned on the operator side. They understand that. Now, are there segments of our industry, you know, even on the operator side, supplier side, and in certain divisions, marketing divisions and others that are really that connected to the resident experience? I would say no. I would actually argue most are disconnected to the resident experience, which is the ultimate customer in this business. You know, suppliers are trying to provide, you know, tools and resources to a management company. But at the end of the day, if you like trickle it down even further, they're trying to provide a better residential experience for those customers on the bottom end of this funnel that they ultimately love their experience living at this property, and that property loves working with your tool, your resource, your technology, because it's helping on retention, right? Like everyone's winning if you're doing that and taking care of you know, ultimately the customer on the bottom line, which in our business is the resident. So if you intimately understand a resident's life cycle and their journey and their pain points, which most operators do that are really well connected, and I feel very well positioned as an operator of 20 years, starting from leasing consultant all the way up to know this. And so it's really helpful. It's fun for me to be able to get into rooms and conference calls with suppliers to help them really understand these resident character profiles and what their pain points are. I talk to many all the time that say, oh, you know, this is their pain points on the residential side. And I have to say, with all due respect, can I completely disagree with you and actually tell you with experience what their pain points are? And they don't care about these other things that you're referencing. You care about them because you're trying to push this new product, whatever the case is. But if it's not solving a real problem, it's not going to go very far.
I hear those similar conversations all the time. I mean, it's interesting. And then I get the psychological thing, right? Like you're always trying to position the thing that you solve first, or, you know, it's protection and loss aversion, right? And so you'll present that, hey, people like pink paint. If you're a pink paint salesman. Everyone's doing pink, right? It just might not be the truth. But you got to have that conviction to sell it and you got to go for it. But, you know, I think it's, you know, we'll bring it back to storytelling right now. So talking about storytelling. So like, again,
but it's the same. You can say pink paint or you can say brown sugar water.
Right.
Therein lies the challenge of a great brand and storyteller.
I'm a great brand. So let's talk about storytelling for a bit here. So I just want to, we're past halfway. I just want to kind of wrap it in or to kind of catch our midpoint. So we talked about brand, Susan Consulting. We talked about how he's solving top of funnel. The goal is to achieve inbound leads, right, for everybody.
Yep.
And part of the work that you do is help isolate that brand promise in a way that's consumable, emotional, and then you help with the distribution of that brand promise through your network.
Right.
And then let's move into storytelling, right? So the storytelling side of things, why is storytelling so important in this business?
I'm glad to see some of the comments there. It is true. Everyone does love pink. I think your question is why is storytelling so important in this business? I would even say storytelling is important in every business. And I would liken it back to simply the analogy of two things, the movie business and the Super Bowl ad business. The most memorable movies that you could probably recite to me, your top five, top three movies, is it because maybe the acting was great, but what happened is that movie moved you. And you could recall the age approximately that you were when you watched that movie, sure. and the perspectives that maybe shifted, cemented, whatever happened emotionally to you during that time when you watched that
yep.
movie.
Maybe Good Will Hunting, Her Stay With My Wife, your move, Chief.
There it is, right? I mean, you can name them all. And I use this analogy all the time with Super Bowl commercials as well. Now, you may not be able to name those off the top like that, but you can have some recollection, or if they come across your YouTube channel, like, oh man, 1991, that Super Bowl, I remember that commercial. That was so cool. Yeah.
What's up?
I mean, there's so many of them. I mean, Britney Spears and Pepsi, right? I mean, there's just so many that you can name that really just had an emotional effect on you. And you weren't sure why. It was almost subliminal, but there was something that you still recall about that. So so I use those examples because those are brilliant storytellers, advertisers, marketers, and branders that get paid a lot of money and work with huge brands that have big budgets. Now, like, our industry is like, listen, we don't got big budgets and all these sorts of things. I tell everybody, and I know leaders love to hear me say this, is creativity is free. And so, you know, if you can't hire, a consulting firm or me or somebody else, because you don't have those budgets, I understand. But should you allocate resources to that? Of course you should. You should, especially going forward. Here nor there, this isn't a business pitch. But the storytell component of it is so important to every business, but to ours especially, because in my opinion, there's not a lot of stories being told in a really compelling way today. And we'll say specifically on LinkedIn or other social media channels. It's a lot of product push, right? A lot of product and feature push and partnership push, just from a content standpoint. There's not sort of these evolution of stories that are happening that you seem to care about. And I'll give you an example. I have people that come up to me and they'll say, like, you're my favorite LinkedIn, like, drama series, right? Like, and I think what they're telling me is that they've been following me for a long time, and that they are kind of on with bated breath, kind of waiting for the next move, the next partnership, the next, you know, your next post, whatever the case is. And for example, when I don't post something, you know, it's like, where are you? Right. And so what I tell my clients that I work with is that you want your audience to be waiting for your next piece of information and following along with the story and the evolution story that you're telling about your product, service, technology, or where your team's going to be and what problem you're trying to fix next and why should they care, right? And so just continuing to bring them along. A lot of people ask, Tony, are you afraid of running out of content? Because I hear this all the time. I don't know what to say. The reality is, if you're committed to the art of telling the story of your company, your product, your service, and where you are and where you're going, you will always have content. Now, it takes a level of creativity most people don't have, is what I've come to realize.
So I'll challenge that for everybody out there that's kind of suffering from a creative block. And because I'm not super creative at all. but what I am is exceptionally curious, right? And so I actually carry a note file on my phone where I write down notes about things that I want to talk about. And so I could be walking along, listen to a podcast. The inverse of what you're saying is, I don't create content. I observe content and then just use that. So yeah, like, so if I see something that kind of makes sense, then I'll just write about that.
Yeah. So content can be designed in any different way. Now, there's some people that are gifted with the ability to take information that they've observed, seen, and create sort of original, we'll call it original content and messages around that. I would argue, I think a few years ago, I realized for myself, I'm that type of creative, right? Like, I could take things that are happening all around in the marketplace, in the world, trends, relevant things happening, and sort of create them in a bundled way to tell an audience in my own unique way through my own lenses. But it's been through many, many years of practice and ultimately early on being a true artist in film, broadcast, and telling stories through visual mediums, right? So this, you know, for me, this has been a skill set and something I probably always thought like, for many, many years. Now, can you create content in a lot of different ways that you don't have to, like, be the most creative guy in the room? Absolutely. You could tell different stories that are happening through articles. You could be a thought leader in a lot of different ways. You don't have to be such a creative type, if you will. So there's a lot of different ways to tell these stories. They don't have to be just one different way. And I'll tell you, I work with different clients and every brand is different and every technology or product or solution is different as well. And so I think there's a different story to tell with every product, every company based on the life cycle mm-hmm. where they are in their company. Are you in the disruptive stage? Does no one know who you are? Well, let's go disrupt the scroll, right? Let's go shake it up a little bit. Are you an established brand that's been around for a long time providing great services? Well, let's continue to tell that story. And do people know about how long you've been around? Okay, if the answer is maybe not, then let's tell that historical story, because it doesn't make sense if we're telling a story today if the audience has no idea of the backstory, right? So that's a different component. Now, if you're a brand new startup and there is no backstory, then you shake it up right now and you say what we're doing today and what we're doing for the future, right? So there's just a lot of different ways that you construct these stories. Ultimately, it has to connect with an audience today, and it has to be relevant to them, and they have to really care. And it's a combination of scientific factors that get them to care, largely is relevance. And I'll tell you, like, the level of unique creativity, algorithms love, right? It's really something I'm going to die on this hill of. Everyone loves to complain about noise or algorithms. It's not even about that, right? It's about relevance to your audience. Do they care about what you have to say? And does it really ring true with them? And is there a creative element that they feel is just so authentic and unique that they must give really your company, and we'll call that marketing, really its flowers, for lack of a better term.
You know what I find what's interesting is that you take a look at this market right now, and everyone probably positioned the current economic cycle as being a price-taking cycle. Like, there's not a lot of folks that can. So in a price-taking cycle, you typically end up competing on price, which is, you know, we're feeling that everywhere, right? You don't have control over price. You feel like you're out of your hands. You end up discounting concessions, right? All those things. And what story can do is story can compete against price. You can begin to be a price maker. Right.
I mean, right.
And the price maker is different than a price taker. They're empowered. They create wins instead of take wins and, you know, catch wins. And I think that's something that this market really, you know, could use a bit of a lift on, is understanding that price making is a different competitive lens than price taking.
Absolutely.
And because go ahead.
Finish. Yeah. It's a great point you're making.
Well, price taking is a race to the bottom. And you're going to be constantly, you know, influenced by, you're vulnerable as a business, as a price taker, to your distribution channels, to the new building across the street, to the rate in the marketplace. But if you're a price maker, right, you can suffer through the empty suite, because your prices are high enough that you can, it's built into the model. You don't give it away for free.
Absolutely. I think right now we're in this sort of economic cycle that we just need business and we're willing to discount at every turn just to keep that business. The reality is, I think taking a step back and really assessing where to the original point that we talked about, where does the marketplace see you? Like, how are you perceived mm-hmm. in the marketplace? Right. And if you're in a point that you're having to continue to like a backstep and discount your product or service, then that's telling you quite a bit where how the market perceives you, because they don't perceive one of two things. They don't perceive you to be as valuable as you think you are. And frankly, you know, they're unaligned, which is really ultimately the same point. But yes, if you're establishing value and essentially educating your consumer about why your product and service is valuable, that's the jam going forward, is educating your audience about what you do, not just what you do, but why it's valuable to them and what problem it solves. Most are not doing that very well. And frankly, the reason why, and I sit in these rooms sometimes, is because they're unaware of the problems their customers have. They think they know, but they have no idea, to use the MTV line. Like, you think you know, but you don't have any clue. And for whatever reason, they just haven't spent the time in either, you know, focus groups or on site or with operational leaders. And I would even argue, skip the leaders, like go talk to mid-level to on-site folks and bend their ear with permission of their leaders, of course. And believe me, their leaders will say, yes, you want to go talk to them without cameras? Go ahead. Like, bring your notepad or bring your digital notepad and take a ton of notes, because they will be 100 with you. And if you want to get really good at solving problems that are real, go talk to them. And to be honest, a lot of the things that you'll see me continue to do, even though I'm a supplier, I'm going to spend as much time in that field as I possibly can, because I know in the years to come, I will just naturally be disconnected from that, because I don't work on site anymore. I'm not intimately connected in these operations meetings, but I will forcefully put myself in those situations to where I'm listening continually, because I'm here to solve their problems, nobody else's problem.
So great segue to Brian's questions. Brian Carsamo, thanks for putting the question there. How do you think, so you just talked about the face-to-face connection, talking to people. Let's talk about in-person events versus digital medium.
Yeah.
How do you find, what's your take on digital versus in-person?
Yeah, this is I think the crux of where our industry is right now. I think there's still a lot of focus on, I think we talked about it early, Brian, by the way, great question. One I think many have. I think there's still too much focus on physical handshakes. There's a time and place for those handshakes. And I think there's a whole generation that may be watching this yelling at their phone or screen and say, boo, Tony's wrong. I would put a lot of money on the fact that I'm right. It's because I've just been observing this change in slow motion. And now it's rapidly accelerating towards digital community build. And I'll give you an example of just my life. So when I go to any conference, and this is not a humble brag, and frankly, it's sweet, but it's very weird. I can't get through every booth without someone kindly, nicely saying hi or wanting to shake hands or just a side hug, which I never take any of that for granted. But in my mind, it clicks to say, for my clients, this is my job, is if they are ever in a conference setting, and let's just say even a digital community build, that everyone is stopping to ask them or talk to them or learn more about their product or what they're doing or catch up with them. That's what every sales person would want to happen to them in the supplier world, is that you are such a commodity, not just you, but your product, company, and service are such a commodity that you can't even get through your emails for the day. You can't even get through a conference floor, right? And I use the conference floor, and it sounds like I'm talking about in-person handshakes, but the reality is, where was that all built? That was not built on the conference floor, right? That was all built in the digital community building over years and consistency.
That's been my experience. My experience to a T is that my conference success rate, so to speak, has only been amplified by my commitment to the digital community.
And I would challenge anybody listening, because this, for whatever reason, this kind of cuts like a moral fiber in us. And generationally, I think it's also hard to pill to swallow for whatever reason that I don't want to accept this reality. I think the longer you don't accept this reality, the longer you and your team privately will say, when is our boss going to accept this reality and give us the leeway to build a brand online and to grow digital relationships in a way that's really thoughtful and strategic, and maybe bring in, guys like Tony or others that are out there that could really help us do that, versus kind of road warrioring, articulation of that word, but being a road warrior in 200 markets, being on the road 200 days at 365, that's not effective today. And in my opinion, it's not efficient. And frankly, there's a lot of money being spent on hotels, food, lodging, all the things that, it's just not as effective as it used to be. And I think things are changing. I also think, trade shows and other people are finding ways to go more of a digital trade show, if you will, the demo days, some of these other ones are seeing the trend going that way. And it's just more cost efficient, frankly, and more time efficient at the end of the day.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's two things. They need to coexist. They can't exist independent of one another. The one amplifies the other. One amplifies, one legitimizes, right? It's kind of like a yin and a yang there.
Yes.
And then ultimately, in my experience, has also been that's where you really find out what the problems are.
Yeah, for sure.
The structure of a Zoom call is not defined to reveal.
Well, yeah, I was just talking to a colleague about this recently. I mean, you know, how do we communicate as human beings? Well, it's primarily through body language and tone of voice, right? So I think what you're referring to is, you know, sure, words we're exchanging on a Zoom and we're doing that now. But if we were sitting in a podcast studio or you were sitting in front of a client and really learning, you would learn a lot more from how they conveyed the information to you than actually what they said. Right. You would know without actually them audibly saying anything, you would know through their body language that this is their greatest pain point. Whether they said this is my greatest pain point or not, you would almost see a physical shift in them when they talked about how uncomfortable this pain point is. And you and your team, if you guys are locked in, right, you guys are like, hey, you know, post-meeting lunch, right? Hey, did you see when that, you know, when that executive sort of shifted that way and you could just see a grimace on his face when he talked about this pain point? That's their real problem. Let's go fix that for them. Right. And so that's where really, I think really savvy, you know, sales teams and leaders of suppliers, you know, supplier products and services are really locked in. And so that's where the in-person can be really, really helpful. And I think you said it very well. Obviously the digital community build is essential, but ultimately, you know, the in-person stuff strategically, right? Because not everyone has endless budgets, you know, really legitimizes the relationship and brings it to life. And at that point, once it becomes real in real life, then it becomes, in my opinion, long-term and sustainable. And at that point, and I think can speak to you and I's relationship, you know, and maybe that's 100%. Where you're going. Yeah.
Yeah. 100%. I would say like I share the exact same experience and I encourage everyone to do it. And I think that you have to be choosy. And I think of it in terms of the buyer's journey, right? Like there's top of funnel activity that has to be at scale and in mass. And we'll wind up here real quick, everyone. And then there's down funnel activity that is about closing. Now, what's interesting is that if your purpose of the show is to close, you better have those deals already lined up. And in fact, you shouldn't be trying to close at a show. But you do learn a lot of middle funnel stuff. And so top of funnel has to work. Middle funnel really works well at the shows. And then closings all happen when they need to close, when they happen. So I think it's if you don't do that middle funnel stuff, you might lose track of where you're aiming on the top funnel side of things. Mm-hmm. So we're going to wrap this up real quick for everybody. Kind of be true to the hour. What's the one piece of advice you give everybody? You would give yourself, a younger self, or someone who's starting this business that's looking to find hell yes buyers?
It's something I tell everybody I say it a lot more colorfully than I'll say it to you, but give less cares about stuff that doesn't matter. The more you do that, man, the more things become very clear in your life. And then also I think very clear in your conversations with clients as well. You realize that stuff doesn't matter if this stuff does, and let's focus on that.
Well, I'll play back something I heard from you today. and that is, the greatest story is yours. So what's your story? I'm not asking the question. I'm like, that's what I heard.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Own your story.
You have to understand it. You have to really understand it. It's not your founder story. And I think that's where it gets really confused. They think, oh, that's the story of how we founded the company. No. Yeah. And to be honest, that's pretty stacked. And frankly, it's actually pretty similar to most companies. So it's not that interesting.
You meet somebody, the first thing you say is, where are you from? What's your story? Right. And that's how kind of things get going.
What's the collection of pieces that got you here? Oh man, there's a lot of folks doing some cool things out there. Let's see, who should you talk to next? I'm going to shout out my guy, and I'm not sure if it's the right fit exactly for the show, but there's a CEO out of Arizona that's doing some cool things on the staffing side. His name is Ryan Paulson. I'm going to shout him out because he's a hustler, and he's working on building his brand, his company's brand. Him and I kind of working on some stuff privately, and man, that guy is taking notes like I haven't seen before and just eager to learn this game. And I think he has a lot of potential ahead. So Ryan, I'm going to shout you out. I don't know if you're watching, man, but, I got a lot of respect for your passion and, I'm excited for his future, man. So.
Cool. All right. I'll reach out to him right away. You've been on, you know, given notice, so to speak. How can we get a hold of you?
Jump on the website, tony-souza.com is probably the quickest way to shoot me a message there. Or you can shoot me an email at tony@tony-souza.com. And of course, you know, look me up on LinkedIn, Tony Souza 1, I think.
Right on. Perfect. Thank you so much, Tony. So everyone listening, thanks for today for listening today. It's a little long. If you listen on Apple or Spotify in the podcast, please hit subscribe, like, and comment. Those things mean a lot to everyone in the digital sphere. Following this podcast, follow me on LinkedIn and Tony on LinkedIn. We're going to have some digital content that relates to this, some highlights, some quotables, and of course the blog post. And I look forward to all your feedback in that. Tony, thank you so much today. Appreciate you going over a little bit. And just what a wonderful share, and thrilled for you to introduce this new, this new approach to solving an old problem in this business. Because hell yeah, we need it.
Yeah, we do. Yeah, every day I'm realizing that more and more.
All right, thank you, sir. Thanks everyone for listening. Cheers.
Bye.
All right, man. Thanks a lot.